All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming to People's Rights in Pasadena at Victory Park. I appreciate your attendance. And just a little reminder of what People's Rights is all about. We stand up for people's rights. And when the authorities are maybe the ones that are abusing our rights, we come together and help each other defend those rights. So in order to defend your rights, you have to first claim your rights. And in order to claim your rights, you have to know what your rights are. And then once you've claimed your rights, then you got to use your rights. If you have the right to free speech, but you never say anything, then you're not really using your free speech, are you? And then the last and most important step is to defend your rights if it becomes necessary. So if you become part of the People's Rights Network, we have a texting system so that if your rights are being violated, you can text us, and then hopefully several of our members, maybe more than several, can show up at your location and help you and act as witnesses and help you defend yourself against tyranny. So that's what People's Rights is all about. It's kind of an insurance policy for activists. So I'd like to get right to our speakers today. We have with us today a very special guest and a personal friend of mine. Her name is Kelly David. And Kelly, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today. And were you able to get a hold of Alauddin?
Yes, he's here as well.
All right. Well, hello, Alauddin. Welcome
hello,
to our People's Rights meeting.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
I appreciate you coming. And just to let the audience know, Kelly and Alauddin are... Alauddin is the founder of the Palestine Charity Team, and Kelly works with Alauddin, and they're here to talk to us about their charity organization for Palestinians, and we are just so lucky to have them. I'd like to just turn over the floor to Kelly and Alauddin. And go ahead and take it away. And when you're ready for question and answer, Kelly, just let me know. Go ahead.
Okay,
the audience
thanks.
Can
thanks.
Hear you.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Adam. Thank you, everyone, for having us. So my name is Kelly David, and I'm here with Alauddin Abu-Sakkar. Alauddin is the CEO and founder of the Palestine Charity Team. He started back in 2017. I got involved very early on with him. I'm the vice president of the organization and also the board treasurer. And so we've been working since 2017. We basically originally started off in Rafah, Gaza, where Alauddin was located. And so we started helping different families, mostly with children in the beginning. We've run several different programs and became a 501c3 and did different projects involving different things, just trying to support the poorer families who really needed the help in the Rafah camps. And then when October 7th happened, basically our mission completely changed, and it became all about humanitarian aid. And Alauddin was actually there in Rafah for the beginning, for the first 4 months of the war. He is now in Egypt. He's been there since the end of February, but we still have a lot of volunteers on the ground. So we're running a lot of activities. So since the war started, we have done a lot of different things, including building tents for the displaced people. And most of the people who were displaced from their homes in the north were sent to Rafah. So the majority of them were there. We also were able to supply water and things like that. I'm going to turn it over to Alaaddin so he can talk more about the organization and the things that we were doing and sort of his experience.
Yeah, thank you, Kitty, for this introduction. So thank you for having us. You know, I'm Alaaddin. I'm founded the Palestine Sharia team. We have been working, as Kelly said, we have been working in Rafah since 2017 to help those who have experienced the challenge in life that they cannot overcome. Our volunteers are working tirelessly to see the need of the families, especially at a different time with a, you know, in situation of famines and providing in its most, you know, several cases. At many points in Rafah, you know, in Rafah camp, you know, we have served only Rafah camp because a lot of the displaced people there, you know, come from the north, you know, after 7 October, you know, full of the displaced, you know, citizens. Our volunteers are finding ways to convert part of the huge needs during, you know, the war that helps to not, you know, kill the dreams and goals in life, you know, of the people, you know, and especially like the people in Gaza. So we find a way to entertain the children to get their mind, you know, off, you know, of the distress, you know, and the trauma, you know, condition they are in. So since the first day in the war, you know, our service in Rafah started with distribution blanket and meals to displaced people in the school, you know, in addition to clean water points, you know, so that we have, you know, so many points in Rafah camp, you know, to provide the clean water, you know, extended 5 liters per day. So the number of displaced people in Rafah has increased more than 1.4 million people from different areas from North Gaza have, you know, said Rafah, you know, in search of immigration safety place, you know, and area, safety area, you know, after like 170 days. They still dream of returning of the ruins of their destroyed house in city. So of life, you know, intense. They are, you know, living in tents right now. So our volunteers have contributed the, you know, like establishment of 50 tents in Rafah camps. You know, accommodate displaced families. You know, it's helped a lot of families. You know that they have a shelter, you know, a safety, you know, shelter. You know, as the case in Rafah, you know, many families suffering enough from basic needs such as gas, clean water, you know, food and medicines. Our volunteer make a big difference, you know, in providing these necessities, you know, with a difficulty, especially under heavy bomb trauma. So our volunteer got out, you know, to understand the need of the each family to provide any service and, you know, ensure its safe arrival. So it's impressive that we do more, you know, for displaced people in Rafah, you know, and also cooperation with other charitable organization in Rafah, you know, to cover, you know, the need and we spread, you know, in for displaced people. So with medical also point and work to transfer them to the complement medical, you know, medical clinic. You know, finally, everything that bring hope, you know, to one family is hopeful for all of us. You know, as we used to, we believe in participation and sharing. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Allah. Basically, our organization has done a lot over the years. I mean, there's a lot that I'm really proud of that we did even before the war to help all of the families who were really struggling. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that there was a lot of struggling going on way before the war started. And now it's become, like Alaaddin just said, that it's about humanitarian aid. And we have, since the beginning of the war, done nothing but work on that. And all of the volunteers, we're lucky to have as many volunteers as we have on the ground. Unfortunately, we did lose some of them. We also lost one of our board members very early on, which is very sad. But we persevered. And I have to say, I mean, I've been here in America the whole time doing, you know, my job of what I can do. But obviously, I was not there. And but I was, you know, in constant contact with Alaaddin, you know, to make sure everything was running well. And it was very impressive, the things they were able to do. I mean, he talks about the tents, but they actually constructed and actually really constructed, you know, what they spoke with a good construction expert, so that they were actually, the tents were not just tents you would throw up. They were bolted into the ground with different wood slats and things like that. So we had over 50 of those. And also when he mentioned about the water, we had a tanker truck that we were able to fill with water from the well. We were lucky enough to get enough donations in order to be able to do this. And we have a lot of video. It's unfortunate that this is over the phone, because we have a lot of videos and a lot of photos of basically the tanker trucks that we could drive around that was filled with water. And there were just lines of people lined up, you know, just holding empty buckets. Most of them were children. I guess it was their kind of their job to bring the water back. And because we were able to get enough donations, we were able to purchase things that, as the war went on, the prices just continued to go up. And so we were able to get hot meals. We collaborated with other nonprofits, and we were all back, especially when Alaa was still there, he was able to actually be able to make sure that every day they were doing something, whether it was driving the truck around to make sure that everyone gets water, working on the tents. And like he mentioned with the schools, you know, was a safety shelter, but there were a lot of children there. And so, you know, they, at one point we had a clown come in to entertain the kids. Another strong member of our team is a musician, a wonderful singer. So he would gather all the kids around. We have lots of videos of about, you know, I would say around 50 children kind of gathered all around, all singing songs together, just to kind of get their mind off of all of this. So our work is not just making sure that everyone gets the necessities and the medical care that they need, but also to try to deal with the psychological trauma as well. So yeah, that's pretty much it. I'm ready for question and answers if anyone else is, or unless, Adam, you want to throw anything in there?
Sure. I would like to ask both of you, have you run into situations where your aid has been blocked from coming into the area where it's needed?
Well, basically the aid is completely blocked. So the way that kind of, I mean, Alaa, you could probably explain this better than I can, but the way that we kind of did things in the beginning was to purchase things. And like I said, the price continued to go up. Alaa, do you want to speak about like what happened towards the end, how you were able to kind of get, you know, the food and things like that?
Well, you know, when I was in Rafah, you know, we bought different everything from the market. So, and we got, you know, some food basket from a different, you know, organization and, you know, buy trucks, you know, but it's very difficult to get the trucks into Gaza. It takes a while. And it's very complicated, you know, way to send it. So we already bought everything from the market, you know, like a vegetable and including the food basket, you know, materials and all of this stuff. And it's not easy to get everything, yani, like one time. So we have to put different things every day, you know, because we can't find the kind of the food basket, like oil and sugar. So we can't find it like every day. So that's why we bought it like in what, like maybe it will take 1 week to buy for a food basket order, like for distribute 200 or 500 food basket, you know, for the families. So, but right now, and the price also is very high, yeah, because there is no supplies in the market, and that's pretty hard, you know, to get anything. And for in the case for the vegetable basket, you know, there is a lot of market, you know, and space for sell vegetable, but also it's very expensive. You know, the price is high because, you know, there is no farmer work, and the army didn't allow any army to work, or the farmer, I mean, they didn't allow to any farmer to work, you know, in the area between the like very close, because the farmer work in the border area.
Can I ask, are the people facing starvation?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Many are suffering with starvation. And right now at this point, it's illnesses as well, because there's no real sanitation there, still no electricity. So a lot of people are getting sick. The hospitals don't have the ability to operate. There's no anesthetic left. People are giving birth through cesarean section with no anesthetic. Little children are being operated on, you know, some of them have lost limbs, things like that. Again, no anesthetic to do that. So yeah, there's lots of starvation going on.
Exactly.
That's putting it mildly.
When I met my family, you know, after I miss my family 1 month, you know, in Gaza, and they bring them to Egypt in Cairo. So I noticed that my nephew and my niece, you know, the kids, you know, it's very like they waste a lot of their from their body, you know, like
yeah, they lost a lot of weight in just 1 month. In just 1 month,
exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, I'm sorry about this tragic situation, and I'm especially ashamed and sorry about my country's part in all of this. And I just want to apologize to you personally for the behavior of my country. And I think, Jane, did you have a question?
Yeah.
So we have another question from one of our audience.
Okay.
Kelly Anala, you have
Hi.
To forgive my ignorance because I don't really know the situation. Now, your organization, is it U.S. donation tax deductible? Is that something we can do?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, we're registered as a 501c3 here in California.
Okay. I have a few other questions. So how many people
sure.
are in Rafah or Gaza that you are trying to help? And the next question,
okay.
is the U.S. helping out at all with food and hospital in any way? I think I've seen some sort of dropping of supplies. And then are you,
okay.
and are the people that you're helping near the fighting and battle zones?
Okay, can you, I'm sorry, do you mind we take question one at a time? Because I already forgot your first question.
Okay,
what was your first question?
How many people are you trying to help in? Is it Rafah and Gaza?
Okay, so I'll explain real quick. Gaza is the whole area, which is about 20 miles long and about, at the longest part, about 7 miles wide. Rafah is at the very southern part of Gaza. That's where we were located from the beginning. The way the situation is right now, because most of Gaza is just completely demolished, so they've pushed everyone who has lost their home to Rafah. So that area is where all of the people who have lost their homes were pushed to. So in that area, there's about 1.4 million just in Rafah. Now, keep in mind, I just told you how it's only 20 miles by 7 miles. There were 2.3 million people living there prior to this. So it was already a super cramped space to begin with. Now, 1.6 million of them are in that Rafah Gaza area.
So, again, forgive my ignorance. Is the U.S. doing anything to help with food, hospital, health, and relocation?
No. In fact, I spoke to several attorneys when all of this was going on, all of them told me that they have clients. They were all immigration attorneys and things like that. And all of them told me that they have American citizen clients who they're trying to get out and they still can't get them out. Now, yes, recently the U.S. has been dropping supplies / aid. Unfortunately, they accidentally killed 7 people by dropping that. With the exception of that, the only other help, they're just supplying aid to Israel. So no, there's no help from the United States, with the exception of the aid that they've been dropping in the past few weeks, and it's not much. And what was your next question?
Yeah, the last one you kind of answered. Is the people living in Rafah near military fighting?
Yeah, well, so that's the thing. I mean, as far as the military fighting, that's the biggest issue here, is like the military fighting. You know, Hamas is a certain part of it, but all of the bombing, and I sort of, you know, kind of went through this. Obviously, I wasn't there, but I spoke with Alaaddin very often, and, you know, we would talk at night, and literally, you know, we wouldn't talk for a long time, maybe 20 minutes. But during that time, we would hear at least 5 or 6 explosions at all times. And so the bombs are just continually going off throughout the entire region. So it's, again, because it's a small, very small area where the actual fighting is going on is kind of spread out and different. Rafah is supposed to be the safe area. That's where they told everybody to go to. That area is still getting bombed and was getting bombed even early on. But most of it happened in the north. And it just, you know, progressively got worse as they moved further south.
Kelly, I'd like to ask a couple questions, if I may.
Sure.
Just to illustrate a point about this whole situation. Alaaddin, does Palestine have a Navy or an Air Force?
No,
they don't. Okay, do you have any Apache attack helicopters?
No.
How about fifth generation fighter jets?
No.
Does Palestine have the backing of the United States of America, the only remaining superpower on the earth?
No. They don't. What Hamas has access to is basically RPGs and rocket-propelled grenades and a few firearms. That's the extent of Gaza / Palestine, you know, because the West Bank is further away. That's the extent of their military. There is no military. It's not a military.
So I personally don't characterize this as a war. I characterize it as a slaughter, and I think it's despicable. But what I'd like to know most of all is how we can help, how we can lend assistance to what you're doing. That's the most important thing I'd like to have you answer, if you could.
Yeah, of course. I wish there was more that we could do to put an end to this, but unfortunately we're limited. So the best that we can do is try to help as many people as we possibly can. And that's strictly through people donating. People donate, and we've been very lucky. Our donors have been really good. They really pulled through during this difficult time, and we're able to help a lot of people. I wish there was more we could do to stop this, but, you know, we're limited.
Just for the Americans that will watch this, can you tell me, if you know, and if you don't, that's fine. Do you have any idea of the percentages of Christians that are Palestinians?
So I don't know the exact number, but it's very low. So there's more Christians in the West Bank than there are in Gaza. In Gaza, the number is actually pretty low at this point. It was higher, But they always had a very good relationship with one another. There were even churches. I had done a lot of research on this in the past, that the Christians and Muslims, and that's the thing, there was actually a church that was blown up that was filled with Christians in Gaza. It's a small number of Christians, but the Christians and Muslims get along very well because they're Palestinian too. I actually personally know a Palestinian who's Christian. He lives here, but same thing. To him, there was really no difference. I mean, they have different religions, but what a lot of people forget is that the Muslim religion really respects the Christian religion. In fact, Jesus is a prophet to them, and he's actually the most quoted prophet in the Quran, even more than Muhammad. They actually have good relationships with one another. And I, you know, in the past, and this is a while back when there were more Christians there, they used to if it was a Christian holiday, they would send their kids to the Muslim families, and that way the Christians could celebrate, and then vice versa. They kind of had that sort of relationship with one another because they consider themselves Palestinian. And I think that's kind of important for Americans to know, because we're supposed to be a Christian nation. That's important to know, that, you know, that the Muslim religion actually respects our religion a lot.
Can you tell me what the media has been doing? Have they been giving Palestinians a fair chance to speak, a fair chance to represent their point of view, or has the media been censoring you?
They absolutely have not reported on things correctly. They have been so completely unfair, but that's not to be, I'm not actually surprised by that, because when they want us to believe a certain thing, they make sure that that's what the media puts out. I mean, anyone who doesn't know Operation Mockingbird, Google it. I mean, that's what they do. I mean, they make sure that they're putting out the agenda that they want the Americans to kind of follow. The media did not do a good job of covering it. In fact, they repeated things that initially were said, that certain things that had happened, and these stories were reported all over the place. And then it turns out that it was actually Israeli journalists who found out that a lot of these reports were untrue. And even the New York Post retracted some of it. For example, the babies being beheaded. And yet they still repeat that. They still say that they keep focusing on the brutality of that day, which kind of, you know, tugs at our heartstrings and makes us think, you know, oh my God, they're all animals, you know, and they don't really understand what's really going on. Yes, it's messed up with what Hamas did on that day. I'm not saying that it was wrong. But also people don't need to understand the history of everything. To say Hamas started it, that's like walking into the third act of a movie. You missed everything that happened kind of before that. That basically, you know, they always were an occupied land. They felt their whole lives that they were basically living in a prison. They were looking over a fence that used to be their land or their family's land, and they were kind of limited to that. And so, yeah, so the media basically just focuses on the brutality of what happened on October 7th, but they amped up that brutality. And I've watched several videos from that day, whether there are surveillance cameras in Israel, cameras from Hamas fighters, things like that. A lot of that stuff has been proven wrong, especially the 40 babies. I always thought initially, like, where would you, unless you're walking into a daycare, where do you see 40 babies? To find that many is rare. But the actual report about the 40 babies that's been pushed around all over the place was originally reported from a reporter who was at the kibbutz, it's called the Kfar Aza, and that's where they said that the babies were hurt. But Israel's own iUnit report actually states that there were no babies killed in that particular kibbutz, and actually only two babies died on October 11th. One was a two-year-old who was behind a safe door that was shot open, and he was killed. a woman was shot who was pregnant, and she was near the end of her term, and that baby died. Those are the two babies who died on October 7th. And it's been, again, it's been retracted in American newspapers and things like that, yet they still repeat it. Because they, of course, the retraction is on like page 170 of the newspaper. So it's very similar to, you know, how they brainwash us with other things to make us believe whatever it is we want to believe. So to answer your question, no, they have not been fair to the Palestinian people.
I don't know if you or Alauddin recall this, but in the lead up to the to Desert Storm, when we invaded Iraq, when the United States invaded Iraq, there was a young woman from, I believe, the United Arab Emirates that came before Congress and claimed that the Iraqi soldiers had gone into a hospital and killed mm-hmm. all these babies that were in incubators.
Yeah.
That story yeah. sounds very similar to the story yeah. that they're trying to tell now. I'm wondering if you see any similarities.
Yeah, it's very similar. And that has been proven to be a lie. She actually was the daughter of someone who was in charge of security. I mean, her job was to put up this story. I mean, she was allegedly from Kuwait, but yet she spoke perfect English. And then now they've admitted that was all a lie. But that's what really tugged at everyone's heartstrings. And we were able to go invade Iraq at that point. Very similar. Yes. Good example.
Right. So I'm wondering also if you happen to know the motto of the Mossad, which is, by way of deception, thou shalt do war. Have you
yeah,
heard? Have
I've
you heard that before,
yeah.
Kelly?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
I'm sorry. What's Mossad?
Okay, so for those of you that don't know, or Kelly, go ahead and tell everybody what the Mossad is.
Sure, Mossad is basically think of it as the CIA of Israel. They're their intelligence operation, so they're in charge of, you know, anything intelligence related.
So their motto, once again, is, by way of deception, thou shalt do war. So there's a lot of evidence also that maybe the Mossad, maybe people friendly to them, we're involved with 9/11 as well, but I don't want to get into that. Suffice it to say that we're not being told the truth. Is that a fair statement, Kelly?
Yes, absolutely.
So can you tell us one last time, if you don't mind, how we can help? Is there a website or a portal where we can donate to the cause?
Yeah, if you're willing to donate, we really appreciate it. Our website is palestinecharity.org. It's pretty easy to remember, just palestinecharity.org. And then there's just a donate button, and that would be a huge help for us. I mean, again, at this point, I wish we could do more, but this is the best we can do for the people who are displaced.
Well, if Allah, are you still with us?
Yeah, Adam, I'm here.
If I can ask a question, and please feel free to decline to answer if you don't want to. I completely understand. But can you talk for a moment about how this has personally affected you, and how you're coping with this these tragic events?
Okay, well, I can't talk about this because this is really sad story. This is sad story in my case that I have to tell to the world. So I graduated from Egypt, my MBA, and I plan to celebrate my 30th birthday in Gaza with my family. I graduate in June 2023, and when I back in July. So I start to look for a job to teach in the school, and I got a job in September, first September, in my old school that I, graduated, So when I get a job, I start my lecture, and my old teacher entered the class and opened the door. And he was like embarrassed. Yeah. Oh, this is Ala. Oh, yeah, I teach you before. How come you are teaching in the same school that you are graduated? I'm so proud of you. And I start to like enthusiasm my student and motivate them, to graduate, because the education is the pathway to betterment in life and culture, and I start to I used to teach like 2 weeks, and 7 October is the start. My birthday, my 30th birthday was in 16 October, so it's really sad, the birthday. And I'm lucky to get my opportunity in my school, but I didn't got it like at all, so I didn't continue. So as a Palestinian, we are very strong, and we can rebuild our dream again. I know it take a while, and also it take a while to heal from the trauma also, because I have been like 130 days in Gaza. So as I said, we can rebuild our dream, and we still continue to look forward to a best future for us, in a peace and a great life that we can have a children, play in a safer place, grow in a safer place, and they get, medicines, they get clean water, they get everything, they get safety home. So that's it.
Well, thank you for telling us that. And Kelly, if I can ask you if there was something you really want to say to not only Americans, but the world about what you're going through, could you just tell us what's on the top of your mind right now?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've thought about this many times. I sort of wish, I just wish more Americans would not watch regular news and kind of do their own homework. Look at it from both sides. I mean, that's what I did. I mean, I got interested in this subject in 1999, and I'm not Arab. I'm not Muslim. I'm not none of that. And I literally looked at both sides. I did all the research I could do. I looked into everything, and after, and it took a while. I mean, that's the thing that kind of stinks about it, is because we can't trust our own media, that you have to spend all this time doing your own homework. But if you really look into the history, and again, with between Google's censorship and their algorithms and the way they work everything out now, it's harder to find information about the real history of how things were. I feel like everyone's paying attention now, and they're still kind of hung up on all the brutality of October 7th, most of which was exaggerated. Again, I'm not saying what they did was right. Of course, there were horrible things that happened, but it's exaggerated to the point that they're able to kind of justify this. And I don't watch mainstream media. I haven't in 20 something years. But occasionally I'll tune in here and there just to see what they're saying, just so I have a better idea. But really, I wish more Americans would just turn off that TV, stop buying newspapers, and just do the actual homework and really pay attention to the history of this. And if you really want to look into the history, you're going to have to go back until like the 1800s to figure all of this out. And, you know, obviously not everyone's crazy like me who's going to spend years researching this kind of stuff. But to really understand that they lived under occupation since 1948. They never were treated as regular citizens in any way. I mean, a lot of people seem to forget, like, okay, there's a war going on, and both Alaaddin and I call it a war. We don't like to call it anything else. And I know what you mean, Adam, and I agree with you. You know, it is absolutely horrible, but that's kind of, you know, what we call it. But even prior to that, I feel like everyone's paying attention now because of, oh, how horrible this is. You know, look at what happened on October 7th, but look at what the conditions they were living in before October 7th, how little they had. And in certain areas, they would only get water or electricity for a certain number of hours per day. And then the other thing again, so it's a war. You have one country fighting another. It's not a country because it's occupied by Israel. They don't have an army. They don't have any of that. So there's a war going on, but yet they have the ability, the one country has the ability to shut the other one's electricity off, their aid, everything else. That's not a war. That's tyranny. I don't know what else to describe it by. So I don't know. I just wish more Americans would kind of do their homework and really look into this, because it's horrible what the Palestinians have gone through since 1948. And now I feel like we're reliving 1948. For the rest of my life, October 7th will always be a date I'll remember, just like I remember 1948. It's the same thing. And so I only hope that something happens, someone does something, and that we can sort of rebuild. I know it'll take a really long time, but I don't want Palestine to be wiped off the map. And that seems to be the goal at this point.
Yeah, it's tragic. If I can draw a parallel to what's going on there to some American history that a lot of people don't think about. When colonists were coming west in the United States, when they got to New Mexico and Arizona, they ran into a tribe of Indians called the Apaches. And the Apaches... Mm-hmm. were in a situation similar to the Palestinians. And they started fighting back and defending their land. And they did some things to the colonists that were invading their land. Now, my question to Americans is, were the Apaches terrorists, or were they freedom fighters fighting for their homeland? I think they were freedom fighters myself, but that's just me.
Yeah.
But do you feel comfortable answering a couple more questions, or if you have to go, we can finish the meeting. It's up to you. We have two people standing by.
Yeah, I can answer a few more questions. I don't mind.
Okay.
Yeah. Hello. Yeah. As a rule, you're supposed to be rooting for the underdog, not the bully. And the Palestinians are the underdog, and then the bully is Israel Zionists. And anyways, it's not a fair fight. And the Arabs would have won from day one. Or actually, they were winning, but with the with the help of the U.S., Great Britain, and I believe France, the countries that armed Israel, the Palestinians didn't have a chance. And so this fighting goes on because they're fighting for justice. Okay, now in regards to those lies about the what happened on October 7th, like decapitated babies, burned babies, cutting out babies out of the stomach of pregnant women, raping women, and I don't know, if one person told me shot the woman in the head while the guy is raping the woman. It's just so far-fetched, these stories. And the whole purpose of October 7th, they were to get hostages, live hostages, you know, dead hostages that could have benefited them. It's because of Israeli torture of Palestinian political prisoners, which is in the thousands. And they are horribly tortured.
Exactly.
I mean, there's a book called The Hidden History of Zionism.
History of Zionism. Great book, yes.
It is very good, yes. And there's a chapter in that book, a story of a wrestler or weight lifter. And he was only 18 years old in Israeli prison. And when he was finally released, mm-hmm. he cannot eat, drink, walk. I mean, it's like they destroy your life. You know, it's like, I'm surprised he's still alive. But they also murder, they kill people in prison too with the torture. They do horrible torture.
Right.
And so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so the purpose was to go there, get hostages, so they could get out.
Exchange.
There's a saying called rape and pillage. That's after you take over a country. Last I heard, the kibbutz, whatever, it's still under the Zionists or whatever, you know. There's no Palestinians that stole back their land. It's not stealing when you take back your land, to confiscate your own land back. Anyhow, so it just doesn't, it's just so, also it's electronic intifa. Okay, it shows like a tank. And who has tanks? Do Palestinians have tanks? No, the Israelis.
No. Yeah,
Israelis
do.
They shoot into a house, kills this woman's husband, and the point is this: it was on the news and everything, and then they kind of cover it up. But the Israelis, they killed their own people. And are we aware of that?
Yeah.
So I don't believe there was really atrocities by Hamas. I mean, it's just that. Okay.
Well, what happened was basically that once Israel finally responded to the attack, they weren't sure who were Hamas hostages or civilians, and they never confirmed this, but they believe that they basically initiated the Hannibal directive, which meant that a soldier was better off dead than in captivity. And so they just started shooting at people. In fact, I think there were 27 hostages that died between the Israeli and the Gaza fence with no explanation of exactly how they died. But if you look at the helicopter footage, they were just basically shooting. They weren't sure who it was. And the other thing, like you mentioned earlier, same thing with a lot of the different homes. You know, when you look at the footage that was from like different Hamas members who had like cameras on them, you know, you look at what kind of they were doing in that area. And then, they had guns and things like that. But then when they showed it on Israeli news, look at the damage that was done. Some of these homes were just completely destroyed. There was nothing left. And you could tell they were blown through with a tank and things like that. And they pushed all the blame on Hamas. But this was during the time when Israel's responding to it. And so they were just basically blowing up homes as well. All of this is also documented as well. So I agree with you completely.
Right. Yeah, I've been to Gaza and I've been to the Middle East in 84 and then with the Palestinian American Congress and then also Palestinian American Congress, I should say. And then also another trip was with ISM to when they were building the wall. And I would like to know, is there any groups that are going to Gaza? I mean, I see a lot of these pro-Zionist groups going to Washington, or no, going to Israel, Tel Aviv, whatever, and showing their support. And what about Americans, if we could go there? Well, hopefully safely.
Honestly,
if you could tell me about
honestly,
if there's any groups.
Yeah. I have a friend who's very active with the different Palestinian group here in Northern California. And as soon as this all happened, and he had been to Gaza many times, as soon as all of this happened, he wanted to get into Gaza. That was his goal, was to get there and try to do everything he possibly could. But he couldn't get in. He basically, and he knows a lot of people higher ups in Egypt and things like that, and went to several different meetings, but he could not get in. So I don't know of a single American who was able to get in unless they, you know, whether had some sort of clearance or something that I'm not aware of. So I don't know for sure.
Oh, hello. Oh, yeah. This is a question for both Kelly and Aladdin. If you both want to answer, if not, if you both don't want to answer, that's okay. If one of you that wants to answer, that's okay. But I'm wondering how we can get more freedom-minded people and people outside of the left in the U.S. To mobilize against the genocide in Gaza, like, and the occupation of Palestine in general?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had a better answer. That's been something I've been thinking about since it started. The only thing I can think of is try to get involved with as many groups as possible to try to organize something. But at this point, unfortunately, I know this sounds sad, but it's gotten so bad. I don't know what we can do. I'd love to figure out a way to mobilize Americans to actually do something. The only thing I think of, and I think of this throughout history, the only time there's ever been any sort of real change, it was when, you know, you have enough people who are really pissed off at the government to step up and say, this is wrong. You know, so in certain countries like Denmark, for example, every Sunday, and it's freezing there now, you know, they gather and in the thousands, in the tens of thousands, they just march through the streets of Copenhagen. If we were able to mobilize Americans like that, and I know there are plenty of them, I see them, you know, here, but not enough. And I think part of the reason is the brainwashing. I wish I could give you a more straight answer, but I mean, this is something that Dean and I have been thinking about for months, and we wish we had an answer.
That's okay. It's like okay to not have a straight answer. I guess what I was trying to say is like, ask like if like any of you had or both of you had any suggestions for that. But if not, it's okay. I'll just put it out there.
Yeah. No. It's good. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Joy. So, Kelly and Alauddin, I'd like to thank you very much for coming. And if either of you would like to say anything at all that you would like, a message to the world, any message, you have an open microphone here, and I'd love to hear it and get it out there for the world to hear as well.
I think the only thing that I would say is that I wish more people would really understand what's really going on and to try to help in some way, whether you're getting active, whether you're contacting your congressperson or you're attending demonstrations or you're donating to the right organizations who are actually doing something. I would say that's something that you need to do. The other thing I'd like to throw in there is, you know, Alauddin's very modest. But, you know, he talks about how he got his job and how great all of that is. But he lost his home. He lost everything. And now he's in Egypt kind of having to start over. But he's very strong. And, you know, so it's really tough to have to go through something like that and then kind of start your life over and figure things out. It's not easy. But luckily he's safe. And that's what matters most. The only thing I would say is I wish more Americans would kind of really, really understand this, look into it more and understand what's really going on. And again, look at it from both sides. Read everything that they're putting, that the Zionists put out. I did that. I read books about it, you know, what they have to say, and then come up with your own conclusion. And I highly doubt you'll be on the Zionist side, but that's what I would say to the world. And if you can help us out so that we can help more displaced people, please donate. And again, the website's palestinecharity.org. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, both of you. And just wanted to let you know, I love you both. We're going to do everything we can to help. Okay.
Thank you, Adam. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Ed.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.